Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to talk about turkeys today with you. Wild turkeys in Wisconsin with our guests, Dan Small and Mark Witeka. Dan, host and producer of the Wisconsin Public Television show Outdoor Wisconsin and Outdoors Radio with Dan Small. He's also a contributing editor for Wisconsin Outdoor News, joins us by phone. Dan, great to have you back.
Yes, Larry, good to be here.
And Mark Witeka with us as well today. Mark's the Upland Wildlife and Farm Bill Specialist within the Bureau of Wildlife Management for our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And both Mark and Dan are involved with this new television special you're going to have a chance to see. It's called Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin. We're going to learn about that special and, of course, talk about the history of wild turkeys here in the state. I've got my stories to tell about wild turkeys. You may have some, too, as you listen in. I hope you'll join in with your questions, comments, experiences. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Mark Witeka, maybe let's start by talking a little bit about the success story. But I tell you, this has got to be... And we've talked about it in the past on the show, but the wild turkey comeback is really a success story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the great success stories of wildlife management, not just in Wisconsin, but really throughout the United States. By the late 1800s, early 1900s, wild turkeys had been nearly extirpated from their historic range, largely due to unregulated market harvest, as well as large-scale timber operations and logging operations. So the bird virtually disappeared from most of its range in the United States. And really, one of the last holdouts for wild turkey populations was deep in the Appalachian Mountains, where there was still large untouched tracts of timber. So some of the early misconceptions amongst wildlife managers were that these birds needed these really expansive pieces of untouched forest to thrive, and we now know that is not the case.
Definitely not.
Really, the efforts to reintroduce turkeys here in Wisconsin took off in the mid-70s. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources struck a deal with Missouri Department of Conservation, and Missouri would ship wild turkeys up to Wisconsin in exchange for ruffed grouse being sent to Missouri. So from about the mid-70s to the mid-80s, birds, about 330 wild birds only, were brought up from Missouri, released in southwest Wisconsin, and the habitat there was perfect. It was a great matrix of agriculture and forested lands with some grassy openings, so exactly what turkeys need. And the bird just took off, exponential population growth, to the point where birds were actually able to be translocated to different parts of the state. And now we have turkeys in all 72 counties, where historically they really only would have inhabited the southern half of the state or so. So truly a great success story in wildlife management.
Isn't it? It really is amazing, isn't it, Dan?
It certainly is. And that's one of the focuses of this show. Mark is featured in the show, both he and Krista Pham, his assistant. And one of the things that we wanted to let people know is these birds were here. They then disappeared, and they are back largely because of efforts of the DNR, sportsmen, the National Wild Turkey Federation, lots of volunteers. And it's a great success story, as Mark mentioned.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it on television, and I know it's going to be done, or it is done, and it's kind of the style of your deer show, Dan, that you guys do, and that is a very good thing.
Yeah, in fact, the idea came after, you know, you're talking about Deer Hunt Wisconsin, which is a show I've done with various folks, mostly DNR folks, for the last 25 years. And for the last few years, the idea has come up, let's do a turkey show. And my co-producer of that show, Mark LaBarbera, who heads up the Outdoor Heritage Education Center, he actually worked with Mark Witeka's predecessor, Scott Walter, to develop ideas for this show, and that's based largely on the new Wild Turkey Management Plan, which is featured in the show abundantly, and it's available online and at DNR offices. And then when Scott Walter left, Mark worked with Chris DeFalm and others to develop the script for the show, and we've got funding both from DNR through the Wild Turkey Stamp Program and the National Wild Turkey Federation, and a little help also from Hunting Works for Wisconsin. So it's been a collective effort that has been cooking for more than a year, but I'd say the last 6 months have been really the crunch time getting it all together.
And it's airing, we'll talk about when it airs, but it's going to be airing at several times, I think, but starting at 9 o'clock on April 7th on Milwaukee Public Television.
That's right. Air times are, they're too numerous to mention here, but we have a Facebook page, Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin, the same title as the TV show, and we have all the air times listed there. I think I have to add one more, but I'll be updating that as we add new stations.
Dan Small and Mark Witeka, our guests today, talking about Wisconsin's Wild Turkeys and the Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin TV special that's coming up as well. I hope you'll join in. We just lost that caller, but you can join in with your questions, comments, or experiences. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. What is so special about a wild turkey?
Well, I'll jump in.
Jump in first, and we'll get you both.
Okay. It's a magnificent bird. First of all, they weigh, an adult turkey weighs 15 to 25 or maybe going on 30 pounds. It's a big, big bird. And when you first see one take flight, they get up like a grouse, and they are airborne and gone so fast that people are astounded. People who just see them walking around or just know barnyard turkeys, when you tell them these birds fly, they just can't believe it. So they're big, they're beautiful, and in the spring, as you know, Larry, this is the breeding season, and wild turkeys gobble, the males gobble, and I think without that gobble, a good part of their appeal would be reduced. But the fact that you can listen to them and talk to them, whether you're hunting them or not, and get them to respond. And then if you
amazing.
Are hunting them, actually call them in close and have them come in looking for that hen turkey that they think you are. It's just a thrill that is unlike anything else in hunting, except perhaps calling deer or calling bugling elk or, something like that.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree. And Mark, you probably got something to add to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're one of the more challenging game birds to pursue. Kind of as Dan alluded to, they're gobbling in the spring, and it takes a veteran to be able to successfully call them in and pattern them. One other thing I like about turkey hunting as well is now especially there's multiple methods for hunting turkeys. So they're traditional. Sitting in a blind or in, mm-hmm. in your camo in the woods waiting for them to come by, calling and responding calls, isn't the only method that people use for turkey hunting anymore. We have the fall turkey hunting season, and now people are able to pursue turkeys with dogs. So for folks who like hunting with dogs, it provides a new and unique opportunity as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Bill in Barneveld has something for us. Bill, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions, and I'll just take the answers off here. I'm curious how Missouri did with their end of the bargain in the ruffed grouse. If they, I would have thought Missouri might be too far for ruffed grouse. I've always been curious about that. And number two, could your guests talk about the downsides of the successful turkey reintroduction in Wisconsin? If there's any of that, I mean, clearly. Mm-hmm. It's been far more successful than anyone imagined, and there are now turkeys in parts of the state, maybe where they didn't occur historically. And I've heard suggestions that all the turkeys may be suppressing, ironically, rough grouse populations in Wisconsin.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's start with Mark on that. Mark, comments?
Sure. Thanks for your call, Bill. I am not 100% sure on how the rough grouse population is doing in Missouri, if they were able to successfully establish a population and eventually a hunting season. I can certainly say that we made out well in the deal.
Yeah, we got the long end of that stick.
But I'm not sure how successful rough grouse are doing in Missouri.
I don't know either. I heard a number of years ago that they didn't take the way the turkeys did here, but that was hearsay, and maybe someone listening has more information, or you can go online and find out.
Find out, yeah, sure. It'd be interesting.
As far as some of the downsides of the turkey reintroduction, we are starting to see, as the population grows, more issues with agricultural damage, for example, and also urban turkey issues as well, where actually very recently I think a flock of turkeys was seen on East Washington here in Madison. So they're not just inhabiting forested and agricultural areas. They're sometimes making their way into cities as well. Now,
I actually had four in my back lawn on the east side of Madison. I mean, we're right in the city.
Sure. Yep. And they are popping up more and more, and our county biologists, especially in urban areas, are dealing with those issues more and more as well. So there are a couple different things that are being done to try and address that. In terms of agricultural damage, the state has an ag damage and abatement program where farmers can collect some damage payments, essentially, for any lost crops. In exchange, they open their land to public turkey hunting. So it's kind of a win-win. They
yeah.
get to control the turkey populations on their farmland. It means extra opportunities for the public to get out and hunt. And everyone wins in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill, thanks again. Let's go to Bill in Knife River next. Another Bill. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hey, good morning. I don't want to throw any more cold water on turkeys moving further north, but I'm a retired Minnesota DNR wildlife biologist, mainly dealing with grouse. But, northern Minnesota has seen a huge influx of turkeys, wild turkeys, moving by themselves, no introductions or anything, moving by themselves farther and farther north at the Minnesota's North Woods. And I'm just kind of wondering there if there's any more downsides to movies, to turkeys moving farther and farther north. And just a little quick insight on the Missouri rough grouse introduction. Minnesota provided some rough grouse to Missouri. I think Wisconsin did too. And I was involved with that. And they did pretty well for a while. There was even a limited hunting season for rough grouse in Missouri. But now they're just almost down to nothing, no more hunting season, and probably it's just too warm and too far south for good rough grouse populations.
Oh, good. Well, Bill, thank you for calling and giving us that little update on the Missouri grouse, but also had that question about turkeys. Our Wisconsin turkeys are probably now over into Minnesota, and we're way north. You got turkeys. I mean, it's pretty tough on the turkeys if you get a bad winter. But there's always been this rumor that turkeys would affect the grouse population, but I have heard other folks say that really is not the case.
No, it's generally not the case. They're generally focusing their efforts on different resources, so they coexist fairly well and inhabit fairly different habitat types as well, where turkey might be in a little more mature forested area with openings. Rough grouse are going to be in very young forest, aspen stands or alder thickets, for example. So they inhabit different areas and utilize different resources for the most part, so they're generally not competing with each other.
Talking with Dan Small and Mark Witeka today about Wisconsin's wild turkeys. Dan is hosting Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin, a great TV special, airs starting April 7th on Milwaukee Public Television. And I know 8 p.m. April 25th on Wisconsin Public Television for sure. Plus, there's a whole lot more dates, and we'll tell you how to find out when you can listen or when you can watch. Coming up here in just a minute, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have Dan Small and Mark Witeka with us. Mark's with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, by the way. He is the Upland Wildlife and Farm Bill Specialist with the Bureau of Wildlife Management for our DNR. So great to have them both along. Both have, obviously, a lot of experience with turkeys and with the history of it and with the current. And actually, looking ahead, there's some things I want to talk about in terms of the turkey management program that I think bodes well for the future. But I want to go to Sierra in Madison next, who has a comment. Hi, Sierra. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for the show. Always admired Dan Small's work. And I just had a city sighting and a question. I was going along the street near the Arboretum one day a few weeks ago and saw some new, unusually large lawn ornaments. And sure enough, one started to move, so that was exciting. And they said in a news piece a couple months ago about these wild turkeys, and if there were some skills or knowledge that we city folk will be learning to cohabit with these wild turkeys in terms of, like, their mating season or what have you, like, especially with postal carriers. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Dan, I know you have a comment, or I bet you have a comment or two.
Yeah, we actually do address the question of urban turkeys and essentially suggest that people not feed them because that draws them in and it habituates them to unnatural food sources, and it makes them congregate in areas where maybe they'd be better off if they were scattered throughout, say, parks or other, you know, other parts of other forested parts of human habitation areas, you know, whether it's riverways or you know, the Arboretum or whatever. We do not address the question of what do you do if a bird attacks you, but you know, anecdotally, I've never had. I'd love to have that.
Yeah.
I can't get close enough to them. But anecdotally, I've heard people say, you know, just try to make yourself bigger than the turkey, the way you might try to scare off a mountain lion or something, and stand your ground or retreat to your car. I have had I've had friends tell me they've had turkeys peck on their windows, on their patio doors. My brother was fishing one time after unsuccessfully turkey hunting, came back and found a bird strutting and showing off to his truck. I think it was the reflection of the bird in the bumper. I don't know. I've seen pheasants do that, but gosh, I don't know. Mark, you got any ideas?
Well, yeah, so, you know, especially during the breeding season, so this time of year when you notice males out strutting, they do get a little bit more adventurous, that's for sure. So to actually be attacked by a turkey would be quite rare, and they do have spurs, but they wouldn't do a whole lot of damage. The best thing to do is just to walk away, and in that sort of situation, you would definitely want to contact your local DNR wildlife biologist, let them know that issue is occurring, and they can handle a nuisance situation like that.
Yeah. Joanne, thanks again, Sierra. Joanne and Neshkora, it's your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, I know too many turkey hunters just think that the only good meat on a turkey is the breast because the legs and thighs are too tough.
Yeah.
However, a friend brought me a whole bunch of thighs and legs he had saved in the freezer, and I took them off. They were off the bone, and I canned them, pressure canned them, and they're delicious.
Yes, canning some of the tougher meat like that in general for wild game, it's amazing how much it'll tenderize some of that meat. And upland game birds in general are known for having a lot of sinew and connective tissue in those legs, and canning does help break some of that down.
Yeah.
Slow cooking will do that, too. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up. It's one of my pet peeves that I have with hunters, whether they're at sportsman's clubs or out in the field, is so many people just take the breast. Now, I save the legs on mourning doves, believe it or not. Mm. And if you take a dozen of those and saute them in butter, it's like eating frog legs. But since it's just the two of us at home now, I don't try to roast a whole turkey. I breast out the turkey, take the legs, the drums, and the thighs, and even that little scallop of meat under the scapula on the back.
Yeah.
And the breast, you know, we usually roast. In fact, we roasted one from last year last night. And the thighs, we slow cook. And the drums, if you cook them over a wood stove, a wood fire, or in a, any slow cooker situation for 6 or 8 hours, the meat just falls off the bone. So it's all edible and it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely. Joanne, thank you. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that. You do talk about cooking and preparing in your TV special, right, Dan?
We don't go into detailed recipes, but we do talk about hunting for food. Keith Warnke, who is the hunter recruitment specialist for DNR, he talks about learn to hunt opportunities, and there's a lot of interest among people. He calls them adult onset hunters, people who didn't hunt as kids, foodies who want to obtain local food, and he's very actively trying to recruit new hunters and teach them that there's no better local food than wild game. So there is a segment on that in the show.
Dennis in Coloma up next. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hi. When turkeys first showed up in Marinette Forest County, as I recall, they were trying to eliminate that population because it was a different strain from the Missouri birds. Do you know if that was true and why they would have wanted to eliminate them?
I don't think that's true.
That's interesting, yeah. To be honest, I'm still fairly new to my position. I've only been the upland ecologist for about 2 months now. But that is not something that I've heard personally. My guess would be that all of the turkeys in Wisconsin, save a few that may have come from very small remnant populations, do come from the Missouri birds.
I recall back when the Missouri birds were introduced, there still is a population in the Upper Peninsula, and those birds came across and still do. They'd cross the Menominee and the Brule Rivers. I don't remember that. In fact, we hunted birds up there a couple times. I don't recall any effort to wipe them out or anything. I don't know that they were encouraged to be there, but there's not much you can do about them once they get on the land, I think.
Well, and, you know, it's just another strain. I would think that would be a good thing, actually, to be perfectly honest. I have never heard of anything like that. So.
The only other thing that I could possibly think would be is if they had some escapes from a domestic poultry facility where they might want to eliminate them quickly just for quarantine, disease reasons. They didn't want that anything coming out of there and spreading to wild populations.
There you go, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Michael and Danbury, your turn. Hi, Michael. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello, Larry, and to the gentleman there, it's great discussion. I just had the good fortune. I'm driving. I go up to Duluth every day, and I live in Burnett County, and the turkey population has grown very nicely. And as I explained to your interviewers, that what this morning and for the last 3 mornings, you can tell it is the mating season, because these toms, you go up to them, and I've come across 12, 24 flocks of in a flock, and there are the toms, and what they'll do is that they'll show their colors and spread, and I'm looking at that. I said, oh, isn't this great? And then they'd go down, and then I'd say, well, what's going on? And then they do it again. Well, they're actually herding the hens. And the hens, it's really funny, because the hens go a little bit to the left or the right, and that's not where the tom wants them to go. So he opens up and shows their colors, and then they turn. And this goes on and on as they walk through the woods. And I actually got a video of it. Now, I'm a photographer, not a hunter, and it's just marvelous. And I actually stopped this yesterday morning, and all 24 took off. And the description of how well they fly, how quickly they get up, and that they actually roost in trees. It's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Michael, you should post that video up on our Facebook page.
I'll try to look for it, and it'll have to be tomorrow, but I'll try to find it.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you so much. Well, great story there, Dan.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I'm glad he mentioned that he's not a hunter, that he's a photographer. The focus of the show is not just on hunting. Although there are a few successful hunting scenes shown, and there is a lot of conversation about hunters being active conservationists, and even some stories from DNR and Wild Turkey Federation biologists, personal stories, why I hunt. They talk about, you know, spiritual reasons for hunting and so on. But, you know, the turkey is on the landscape, as Mark could tell us. It's here to stay, and it's a great opportunity for wildlife watchers, for birders, for people who just enjoy seeing, you know, the critters that we have. And, you know, we do say a fair amount about that in the show.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Michael is right. Watching a big old tom herding 15, 20 hens.
His harem, yep.
His harem is really something to see.
Really? They are definitely neat, charismatic birds, and I guess that's why Ben Franklin originally proposed them as our national bird.
Mike and Slinger has something for us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you were talking about turkeys pecking on your window, and I had one last week. It was a big tom, and he had about, I would say, a good 4 or 5 inch beard on him. And I didn't see him coming on deck, but I think he came up for the bird seed. And all of a sudden I looked, and here he was right by the window, and he was full-blown, just in full strut, everything. And he kept looking back and forth, and I'm sure he saw his reflection. Sure. Bam, 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 he started knocking on the window, so I had to open the door and scare him away. He couldn't break the window. But, yeah, they're living my wits. Sometimes they've had 18 of the crack, and I love to watch them when they go up at dusk, and they go up in the trees to roost, and then they all drop down almost at the same time in the morning and the dawn, and off they go.
Off they go. Yeah, it's really fun to see. And, Dan, you said you'd had other stories, and I've heard some, too, of turkeys attacking windows.
Yeah, you know, if you go online and do a search for that subject or turkeys walking down the street, you know, Mark mentioned the birds on East Washington there. A friend of mine during turkey season last year sent me a photo of a bird walking down Oakland Avenue in Milwaukee. And, you know, it's not something you want to see when you spent a whole day in the woods and you didn't get close to a bird. But, you know, like deer and other species that have found a home in, especially in our parks and our corridors, like river corridors or railroad corridors that provide access into the interior of cities or suburbs, the turkeys have moved in and they're quite brazen, and they're very much at home.
Oh yeah, very much at home. I've got some photos that I took with my cell phone of, I think, 5 toms that are all standing right outside the Jennifer Street Market
mm-hmm.
on the east side. Oh man, Mike in Madison has something. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good afternoon. Quick story before I ask my question. My mother has turkeys come up to the house, and she's had the turkeys come up and knock on the door. But she has a cripple-leg turkey that's been ostracized from the rest of the flock, and she puts food out for the turkeys, but they won't let the other one eat. But this turkey has gotten smart enough now where it will actually come up and knock on the door. It'll look through the door first, and if it sees her standing in the dining room or kitchen, it will knock on the door and wait for her to come out and hand-feed it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They're real smart turkey. But my question is all my other fellow hunters think I'm a bit crazy, although I've actually seen this. They say that turkeys don't swim and turkeys don't like water, but I've seen turkeys fly down and swim in the rivers just like a duck or goose would and clean itself in the water, although I've heard from I'm the only one that I can have ever heard of that has seen a turkey swim, and I was wondering if maybe with all your experience and talking to many other folks that if you've heard of that as well. Everyone seems to think I'm crazy.
No, you're not crazy, Mike. Turkeys aren't naturally water birds, obviously, but there have been reports of them swimming. I don't think, you know, I think they're gonna fly and walk when they can, but I actually remember seeing a video of turkeys swimming, I think in Missouri. And you could Google that, and I'm sure there's videos posted online. But they do in fact swim, and they're not terrible swimmers, but they're not great either.
There we go. Well, Bob in Viroqua has a comment. Let's go there, Bob. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What have you got for us today?
Well, we used to live in Delafield and next to Lampen Peak Park, and we'd have a lot of turkeys that would cut through our yard and occasionally stop at the bird feeder. We also had a cat that would go out and join the turkeys. I looked out the window one day, and the cat was laying in the middle of about five or six turkeys and actually would walk around with the turkeys. The turkeys would walk up our neighbor's driveway, and the cat would be in the middle just being buddies. It was just a real strange situation to see a cat and the turkeys walking together.
Yeah, that's not something you see every day.
Oh, that's a great story. Another friend of mine had telling me about hunting and being on a side hill, and down below and sort of in the ravine, there were some turkeys, and then some deer came, and they're kind of a young deer, and the turkey, one of the turkeys would kind of nonchalantly head over to that deer and then sort of run after it a little bit, and the deer would run away a little bit, and then he'd turn around, walk away, and then the deer would run after the turkey a little bit, and they played back and forth, chasing each other a little bit.
Years ago, we had a cat that actually, it wasn't herding the pheasants, but two pheasants that must have been recently released birds. They were coming up out of the woods, which is not a pheasant habitat.
Yeah.
Cat was walking behind him, and I think he sensed that they were too big for him to try to take. And they paid little attention to him. And I'm wondering, I see this, you know, as you know, Larry, we have livestock, and I see this with the chickens and the sheep kind of ignore each other, or they may, you know, express curiosity toward each other. And crows, now that the snow is gone, they'll land right in the sheep pasture, and one of the sheep will go up close to a crow, and the crow will just walk off a little bit. It's interesting to see wildlife species and domestic species that are not predators and not a threat to each other. They coexist. They don't seem to be bothered by each other's presence. But if I open the door, those crows are gone.
There you go. And Bob, thanks again for calling. I want to give Glenn in Fox Lake a chance to join us. Glenn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. A couple of comments. I want to compliment Dan on his last Outdoor Wisconsin. Had that young lady that was born with part of her arm missing and snow skied, golfed. I mean, that was so inspirational. That was just a great show. The other comment would be, all of the stuff that's on Wisconsin public television that's about Wisconsin is just so great to watch. And then the question, the first gobbler I got was in 1999. I've got a number of my, I'm retired, I can buy extra tags. I have not seen a gobbler breed a hen in all those years, and I watch over a field with binoculars. Do they breed when they come down? Do they breed in the trees? Unless after so many years, you'd think you'd see one.
Yeah, well, with birds in general, the actual breeding occurs very quickly. A tom will kind of jump very quickly and flutter its wings a couple times on the back of a hen, and that's pretty much it. Then it's done. So, in the blink of an eye, it is something you could miss for sure.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that, that comment on the TV show. That, young lady, Audrey Crowley, 8 years old. She is the current state champion skier, downhill skier for her age group, for abled or any, you know, disabled folks. She's a great inspiration, and that show is posted on the Milwaukee Public TV website. If folks didn't see it, they can catch it there.
Oh, wonderful, Glenn.
You know, this Wisconsin life, Wisconsin foodie around the corner. I mean, those are some of the greatest shows you're going to watch.
Aren't they wonderful?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I love those shows too. And Tom in Green Bay has something for us next, a comment. Tom, hi. Thanks for calling.
A little bit more on the history of the turkeys in northeastern Wisconsin, up in Marinette and Forest and Florence County. The early introduction, there was only a remnant population left of 35 to 40 birds on the eastern portion of Nicolet.
Okay.
And there was actually some students, student had telemetry on those back in the 70s. And then we had a really bad winter. The turkeys in Michigan were doing great. They had a hunting season, but they fed them in the wintertime. Michigan DNR. And then what happened is we had a really bad winter, and we had a mass migration that came across the Menominee River. And there were turkeys everywhere, and they linked up with the ones that were left on the Nicolet. And basically, I don't think there's been any stocking in northeastern Wisconsin. I think most of what's up there is from that what happened up in Michigan and the UP.
Interesting. Yeah, that could well be.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the case, but it's interesting, Larry, always with your show, you put a question out there and somebody who knows a little more calls in.
That's what I love about this show. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the call very much. Josh in Sparta has a comment or question. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Larry. I was just calling in. I was never a really big turkey fan, but I got involved with a local branch of the MWTF called the Monroe County Longspurs. And the biggest thing they do, in my opinion, is the Learn to Hunt program with the DNR. And the ability to take kids out in the springtime like this and show them what the outdoors is all about, hunting some turkeys, I'd really like to commend any organization that participates in a Learn to Hunt program.
Yeah, that's a great program, and I can say let's let Mark and Dan talk about it. Mark, you want to comment?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It is an absolutely fantastic program. I've been involved in some Learn to Hunts and have presented on biology there, turkey biology, as well as some other species. We've done Learn to Hunt deer, Learn to Hunt rabbit, Learn to Hunt turkey. So been involved with a number of those, and it truly is a great program. It teaches safety, it teaches hunting techniques, gets you a little hands-on experience, and then you get to go out and actually hunt with a mentor as well. So it's a very safe and a good learning environment for folks that are new to hunting.
Yeah, absolutely. And this whole turkey hunting in general, I think, and Dan, maybe you can comment on this too. I have a 12-year-old daughter. You know, she started at 10,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we've gone through the hunter safety program, and for me to get have the chance to go out in the spring of the year with my daughter, and we have a little camouflage tent kind of thing that we use, so. That makes it a little easier in a way when you're 10, 11 years old, if you can get antsy. Well, actually, when you're my age, you can get antsy, too.
Yeah, I can't sit forever anymore.
But it's just the hearing the birds and calling and all the other wildlife that you see fox or you might see other deer. You know, it's just a really great experience.
It certainly is, and we feature, especially in the public version of the show. Now, the show is going to air on commercial television as well, and that has to be shortened because there are commercial breaks. But the public version of the show has a long segment on the Learn to Hunt program that Mark LaBarbera videoed last spring at Governor Dodge State Park. And there's a great story, or there's several stories told by some of the young hunters, and about their first hunt. And one kid in particular, Calvin Damp, I think is his name, at the end of his story, you see him struggling to pick up a 25-pound bird. I think he weighs 60 pounds, maybe soaking wet. And it's a great way to get kids into the outdoors and interested in hunting because, as you said, you know, you can sit in the blind and they can listen to what's going on, watch what's going on. They can read. They can take a nap. In fact, Calvin says the first thing I did is I took a nap, and then they woke me up, and there was a bird. And the youth hunt, which is a special two-day hunt, is actually coming up. It's
April 9th and 10th.
9th and 10th, yeah.
Believe me, I know all about that.
Yeah, I'll bet you do. And it's a weekend after the Deer and Turkey Expo, which is this weekend. So lots of stuff for kids.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful experiences. Talking today with Dan Small, host and producer of the public TV show Outdoor Wisconsin and Outdoors Radio with Dan Small. And he and Mark Witeka, our other guest, upland wildlife and farm bill specialist with the DNR, talking about turkeys and, of course, the TV special that Dan's hosting called Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin. It's going to be on many times. Just to give you two, the first one's April 7th at 9 p.m. on Milwaukee Public TV. And I know Wisconsin Public Television Network carrying it at 8 p.m. on April 25th. Many others. We'll give you some more information on how to find where you can watch it in your neck of the woods in just a minute or two. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at turkeys today, wild turkeys in Wisconsin with Dan Small and Mark Witeka. I'm Larry Mueller, and again, it's great to have you along. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Rick in Grant County called in. He used to see turkeys in the 1970s along the Wisconsin River. Could those have come from Iowa? And I don't know. Dan or Mark, do you know if is there an Iowa turkey population, number one?
There is. My guess would be that it was a remnant population, just a small flock that was, you know, avoided the hunting pressures there.
And Heather on Facebook says she had a not a good experience with a wild turkey several years ago. She was driving north on Highway 53 into Chippewa Falls and had one fly across the road and into the back door of her car. $3,700 in damage, and what was left of the bird was weighed 21 pounds. There you go. So they can cause some damage. I don't know if we've got any stats on car turkey damage. We keep good car deer damage data, but I don't know about that for turkeys. Brian in Fond du Lac. Hi, thanks.
Hey. Thanks. Hey, how you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, you were talking a little bit before about wildlife interactions with a couple different species.
Yeah.
And I was pretty much an avid viewer of wildlife whenever I got the opportunity on a 60-acre plot I used to live on. I used to get out in the woods and sit in tree stands and sit on the ground blinds all year round and just watch, follow patterns. And that was back in the days of being an avid bow hunter. And I kind of let the bow hunting go after a while because I got to see some pretty interesting things. I watched a couple hunters deal with a mistake that they made in their hunting practice, dealing with wind and so on. And then I suddenly realized that it took me 3 or 4 years to watch this thing. It was just fascinating. Two does and a buck would follow a flock of about 15 turkeys. And during turkey season, the deer would smell the hunters. And during the deer season, the, you know, two dozen eyes of the turkeys were invaluable to the deer. But it's incredible. I've never seen anything like that before. It was the most fascinating learning experience. The one doe was quite an older one. Eventually, she died. But the buck that was with him was always a phenomenal buck. 10, 12 points all the time. Just crazy. They're very, very smart, and they start to learn very quickly about how to deal with the greatest predator of all.
Yeah, people. Well, that's a new one on me. I haven't heard that one. Dan, have you?
Actually, no, but, you know, the deer hunters are always wary of blue jays and crows, at least.
Yeah.
You know, the lore is that if the blue jays sound off, the deer know it. I've got to believe that, and Mark maybe has some, you know, other than anecdotal information on this, I've got to believe that animals pay attention to each other's, you know, different species. I know deer hunting years and years ago with some DNR folks during a muzzleloader season, I was they put me in a stand near a horse corral, and these two horses spotted a deer before I did. I looked over the horses, and their ears were pointed in this direction, and sure enough, here came a couple deer out of the woods.
You
know, wildlife, they can, to a very limited extent, communicate with each other, and especially certain things like alarm calls will set off other species in the area.
Jim emailed to say that years ago he harvested a gobbler. And there was one gobbler and 6 to 10 jakes. They the jakes were off a little ways away. But when he downed the gobbler, the jakes came running and attacked the gobbler like they were sort of getting back at the dominant bird. And I've actually seen a video of that.
I've had that happen several times, usually with jakes, but sometimes with adult gobblers as well. Either let's beat him up, he's down now, or maybe they're fighting for, you know, to become the dominant bird. I'm not sure. Mark, Mike might have some ideas on that, too. Yeah.
I would guess one of those two would be correct. They're either trying to take over as the dominant bird and therefore the harem that Tom was holding, or that they were just simply attacking the dominant one while it was down. They saw their chance. So.
Yeah, interesting. Matthew and Milwaukee. Matthew and Milwaukee, we'll get to you in just a minute, but let's go to Adrian and Cable next. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Larry, Dan, and Mark. I thought I could add a little bit to your discussion about the turkeys in northeast Wisconsin.
That'd be great.
I was the wildlife manager in Shawano from 1984 through 1990, and that included Shawano and Oconal County, and I was part of the Marinette area, so I also worked in Marinette counties and Florence counties. And yes, back then we did have some turkeys in Marinette County and into Oconal County that were part of original turkeys released in Michigan that were birds that originated from game stock farms, game farms. So they were not considered fully wild, and they weren't the wild strain of turkeys coming in from Missouri. Mm. And although there was never an attempt to totally try to eliminate them, there's some question about how much you wanted to help them along. And I remember in the 1980s, I had a request from a Nicolet Forest that they wanted to supplement their birds in that area because they wanted to get the population to grow a little bit, and they wanted to include some wild birds. And I met with the DNR Turkey Committee, and they flatly turned me down. They said that was way too far north for turkeys. There's no way they're going to make it. So we didn't release any birds there. But before I left the Shawano area in 1990, did release birds in Gillette area of Oconal County and several places in Shawano County, and some of those birds I'm sure would have spread further into the Nicolet. And I think after I left, there were some releases further into Marinette County as well. So there was some reintroductions in those areas, and yes, now those birds are doing very well. The game farm birds apparently didn't dilute the gene pool that we were fearful of or spread diseases, but that was a concern back in the 1980s.
Oh, well, Adrian, thank you so much for filling us in. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Adrian is one of the great wildlife managers with the Department of Natural Resources, and great to have him listening in and great to have him calling in. He's called in other times as well. Now, Matthew in Milwaukee, we turn to you. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
First-time caller, long-time listener, great topic, love the show. I know other callers have talked about urban turkeys in the Milwaukee area. I've been back here about 16, 18 years and lived around the area, different areas. Now I'm out in the Granville neighborhood, and I've been seeing a lot of wild turkeys in different areas. Some I would expect, but others not quite so much, like 76th and Hampton area at rush hour. I think he was going for steak and potatoes, but is there something that's driving them into this area particularly? I haven't noticed in the other places I've lived turkeys so much as other wildlife.
Okay, yeah, what about it? And Mark, I'll turn to you for that.
Sure. First. You know, I think there's probably two things going on in urban areas where they're moving into. One is they have easy access to food, so whether that's people's bird feeders or whether they're feeding turkeys directly, there's easy access to food. And the other thing is that there's very little pressure, so not a lot of predators in urban areas, though coyotes are moving into urban areas more. But also, certainly, there's no hunting pressure for the most part in these urban areas. So a combination of easy food and lack of pressure on the population lets them get by and thrive even.
Yeah. Yep.
Are there geographical factors that weigh in? For example, now I'm on the northwest side of Milwaukee in the Granville area. There's a lot of bottomland. The Menominee River and such.
Sure, yeah, that would certainly play into it. You know, their roosting locations at night, having more parks or bottomland hardwoods like that around for them to move into.
Yeah, that would play a big role. We have over on the east side, there's a old farm field that's kind of, you know, sort of right on the edge of the urban area there, and man, that's where the turkeys are congregating in there right now. And we're seeing a lot of them there. So there you go, Matthew. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Janet in Iron Ridge, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Sure, there sure are a lot of turkey stories here from everybody, and I just have one more to add. A few years ago, when there was all those underground explosions around Clintonville and Shawano area, and, you know, middle of the night, banging, loud noises, I thought it had traveled all the way down here in Dodge County, was awoken to a baying that shook our house just louder than you could ever imagine. In the morning, there was a dead turkey in the lawn that had hit the house.
Wow.
And then I'm thinking, what scared it out of its roost in the middle of the night? You know, they can't see in the dark.
And what was it?
A day later, there was a great horned owl on the pier.
Oh, man. Well, that's a good story, Janet. I'm glad you called and told us that one. And we'll probably get some more stories. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, talking turkey today with Dan Small and Mark Witek. Mark is the Upland Wildlife and Farm Bill Specialist within the DNR. Dan Small, host and producer of the public television show Outdoor Wisconsin and Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, also the host for the TV special Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin. It's going to air on multiple networks, including Milwaukee Public Television on April 7th at 9 o'clock. I know Wisconsin Public TV at 8 o'clock on April 25th. And there are many, many more airings for that. So, and you can find out, you can go online to learn more about that. And we'll certainly talk some more about it as we move along today. And Dan can mention it right now. As a matter of fact, a trapper called to ask you to mention the children's book that is shown in that special.
And I'm glad he did, because that's one thing I definitely wanted to mention. Keith Beam, who is well-known in the hunting circles, he invented the hub-style blind for hunting. He has two young kids, and he has written a series of books, one on turkey and one on deer hunting, and he's got more in the works, but they are interactive, and we actually, I don't want to give the whole show away,
no,
but we feature Keith reading to his kids from this book. It's called Spring Thunder, and the look on his daughter's face when she pushes the button and makes the gobbler gobble is just priceless. It's a great story, and we were able to partner with Keith to feature some video that he had shot to promote his book. We actually used that in the show, and his series is called Drake's Adventures, and Mark LaBarbera, my partner in producing this show, his Outdoor Heritage Education Center has actually purchased several hundred of these books and is making them available to libraries around the state. And Trapper and I are going to be distributing some to libraries in over here in Vernon County, Viroqua and Westby and Lafarge and Cashton and other places. So, Trapper, thanks for reminding me about that.
All right, there
we
go.
I'll have them at the Deer and Turkey Expo this weekend if people want to see them.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. And thanks for that comment as well, Trapper. We've had several additional phone calls from people who are saying, oh, you're all wet on this turkey-grouse situation. There are people who think that turkeys do get in the way of the grouse. And I know, Mark, you've got a little more insight to share on that.
Sure, yeah. It's a pretty common point of view, especially amongst grouse hunters, that turkeys are competing for resources. I think the big factor that might be driving boons for turkeys in certain areas while grouse decline is largely the succession or the aging of that forest. So in Wisconsin, for example, the timber industry used to be very big business here, managing very, very large tracts of forest in the north, for example. So there was large-scale operations, large-scale timber harvests, meaning that there was always quite a bit of young forest on the landscape, and that young, early-growth forest, you know, about 10 years after a cut, is what grouse thrive in. Well, as that forest ages, it becomes less appropriate for grouse and more appropriate for turkey. So what some people may be seeing is just that natural succession of young forest turning into mature forest and going from proper grouse habitat to more appropriate for turkey.
Yeah, so the turkeys really aren't driving the grouse out. They're just responding to the wildlife habitat that is now better for them than for the grouse.
Correct. And a lot of that has to do with the amount of active management on lands here in Wisconsin. Less and less timber is being harvested. And as we manage as forests get parceled up and sold off in smaller and smaller acreages and become less actively managed, we have been and will continue to see the forest transition from some of those early to more mature stages.
And maybe this is the time, and I know we have every one of our phone lines is filled, but we've joined other states to work in the driftless area in terms of management. To help sustain the turkey population, and I know it's you talk about it in Dan talks about it in the TV show, but how did this come about, and what do we hope to accomplish? And probably both of you comment, but Mark, start with you.
Sure. So we're working with a number of other agencies and organizations to kind of create an initiative to help manage the forests in southwest Wisconsin in that driftless area. Again, we're seeing kind of a lack of management, of timber management on these properties. So they're transitioning what historically would have been largely dominated by oaks, which oftentimes are sustained by fire. As we see fire being suppressed on the landscape, these forests that were historically oak, which are obviously very important for wildlife by producing acorns, they're starting to transition into more of a maple basswood forest, which would be typical of an area not receiving fire. So it's in its early stages, and some upcoming meetings are being planned with other agencies and organizations like the Rough Grouse Society to try and figure out ways where we can manage those forests in the driftless area and get some of the young forest and oak-dominated forest back on the landscape.
And Dan, you do talk a bit about that in your TV show.
We do. In fact, the National Wild Turkey Federation's involvement in I think it's the very same project, or at least it's related to it. Chris Eater, the Director of Development for NWTF, announces that the driftless area is the pilot for a national program. They've focused on 87 different landscapes nationwide in six, they've divided the country into six habitat or area types, and I think they call the upper Midwest, the America's crossroads, and they've chosen of all these 87 focal landscapes nationwide, the driftless area, the four-state area of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois, as a pilot for this 10-year program that they hope nationwide will preserve or enhance 4 million acres of habitat, recruit 1.5 million new hunters, and provide access to 500,000 acres of hunting land that's not open to hunting now. And here in the driftless, the goal is 20,000 acres of habitat work and 5,000 new acres open to hunting. And he puts a price tag of $300,000 on it. And of course, the NWTF is trying to raise money, and they have a number of other partners. Mark mentioned a few of them there. But it's a great project, and it's just really neat that the national pilot will be right here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Those National Wild Turkey Federation banquets are a lot of fun.
They are.
and great fundraisers for the organization. Gary in Mondovi, I think. Gary, thanks for calling. Hi.
Thanks, Larry. Take my call. I just had a couple comments. I myself personally get a lot more pleasure out of actually just calling the bird in rather than the shooting part of it.
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of guys do. That's just a real thrill to get one close enough. I've had them in close enough where I could reach out of my tent and grab by the neck if I wanted to.
Try that sometime.
But obviously didn't do that. And also, one of the callers mentioned about the Jakes going over to a dead tom and pecking at a train to establish dominance. I actually had one time had four Jakes coming across the field from one direction and a tom coming to my call from another direction, and the Jakes actually circled me and ran the tom off. And it was pretty interesting. You know, they ganged up on him, and he didn't. He's either really scared or chicken, but whatever. But then 2 hours later, he circled back, and I wound up getting it. So he did come back looking for the call. My question was, they were talking about the breeding. Do these hens have to be bred every day for each egg to be fertilized, or do they? Can they be bred like once every 3-4 days or once? How does that actually work?
They can actually be bred just once.
Okay.
Yep.
That was my question, and thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill in Arcadia has a comment. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I've kind of an interesting story, and to add to some of your fun stuff today.
Yeah.
I was playing softball with a team in Neillsville area, and back in the, it'd probably been about 75, 76, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And one of the guys was a game warden, and he had been in on the turkey releases and had some fun information on that. Anyway, he was commenting that some of the first, or perhaps the first in Wisconsin, was around Neillsville release, and I'm sure you can ratify that or deny it.
Yeah.
He said they didn't take very well. Perhaps it was a rugged winter, a lot of snow or whatever. But then they decided to try and release them in hilly country down near Viroqua.
Yeah.
And as we spoke, I commented, oh, that's kind of the country where I'm from. He says, well, then you might know, like, Genoa. And I said, yeah, that's even closer to where I lived, about 8 miles. And then, well, what about Romance, Wisconsin? And yes, that's like 3 miles from my house. And as it turned out, their first release in that country was on my uncle's farm.
Oh, small world.
Right near Romance, Wisconsin.
Oh, small world. And that's pretty much where it was, too. I mean, that was where it was.
Yeah, that was the initial releases for the state, yep.
Yeah, I have the Bill, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. It's a great story. Appreciate it. Leanne in Green Lake has a question. Hi, Leanne.
Hi. Hello, gentlemen. I want to pose a question to you. I've always believed that, or was told years ago, that a turkey is all dark meat. And I had a friend argue that with me, and she said, no, they're white meat breast, you know, white-breasted meat. And so I want to pose that question to you guys.
Yeah.
Sure. So certainly in domestic turkeys, you get more of the white breast meat. That's largely due to the fact that they're in pens, they're inactive, they're not flying. With wild birds, you do tend to see much darker breast meat just because they are flying. They're a little bit tougher and the muscle's a little more developed. So wild turkeys are more dark meat.
Yeah, a little bit more. But they taste a lot like a regular a tame turkey, as far as I'm concerned. Dan, what do you think?
Well, they do, and people who ask me, when people ask me what does a wild turkey taste like, I say it tastes like turkeys used to taste like when you know, you got your Thanksgiving turkey from your uncle's farm. The breast meat is darker, but if you lay a breast and the thigh side by side, it's very clearly the breast meat is lighter. And that's because they don't fly long distances, I guess. And, you know, Mark could talk more about blood supply to the muscles and all that, but it's delicious. And
oh, yeah.
You just have to keep it moist. We just put them in a take a breast, put it in a casserole dish, and put a little water in it, and cook it for several hours at a low temperature, and it's absolutely delicious. It has more flavor than domestic bird.
Yeah, absolutely. Leanne, thanks. Appreciate the call. Mary and Ashipan, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, everybody's been talking about the adult turkeys, and I want to tell you with our experience with the poults.
Yeah.
We have a lot of wildlife habitat where we live, and we leave, when my husband mows the grass around our property, he leaves areas in our yard that are long or grasses, and so the Mrs. Turkey would come along, walking along the edge of the long grass, and then you could see the little poults kind of like fluttering up to catch the insects along them. You know, they were walking up. They appreciated the mowed path.
Oh.
And so that was fun. We would look forward to watching her in spring come with her young ones.
Okay. Another great... I'm sorry?
We enjoy feeding the jakes in the winter, too. But, you know, nobody... It was really special to see the mother with her young ones.
Oh, yeah. So many great stories. That's one of the beautiful... One of the wonderful things about the wild turkey explosion here in the state. There's, I don't know what percentage, but a pretty good percentage of the people living in this state have seen turkeys and have had, and many, many have had really cool experiences like that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm calling. I heard one of the previous callers talk about not ever seeing a breeding of a turkey.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, my backyard seems to be the breeding ground, and I've seen them breeding a number of times, and it's quite an interesting process. Like you said, the actual event is quite short, but what happens is the Tom will kind of herd them up, and one of the hens will eventually lay down in front of them and spread her wings, and then the Tom will almost looks like a back massage. Gets on top and with his feet goes on her wings and on her back, and that ritual goes on for about 5 minutes. And then eventually the breeding process takes place. But, you know, I've seen it a number of times, and it's exactly the same every time I've seen it.
Isn't that interesting? Well, actually, well, thanks, Bob, for that, because I want to go to Georgia in Green Bay with something I think similar. Let's go there. Georgia, hi. Thanks for calling.
I have actually the same. I have a question, really. We, our backyard is a breeding ground, too, and I've seen turkeys breed many times. But yesterday, these two turkeys came, and the female laid down, and the male just stood on top of her. And as your previous caller was saying, like massaging her, he stood there, and he was doing a dance on her back for about 10 minutes. I took a picture of it. And finally, the female just got up and walked away. Now, did they actually breed?
Good question.
What happened?
It very well could be. It's definitely part of their breeding behavior. I'm not sure why they do that.
But he never sat down.
Okay.
He just stood there and danced around on her back for about 10 minutes. And she finally got tired of it and walked away.
It is.
Maybe it was a Jake who didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, I wonder.
I thought maybe it was a young turkey that didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. That could be. It's definitely breeding season now, but it doesn't peak until, say, mid-April or so. But if the hen was letting the Tom walk on top of her like that, then...
The hen was ready.
She was ready, yeah, because normally she'd buck him off and fight that if she wasn't.
And she sat there.
Yeah, well, interesting. And, I guess the guy didn't know what he was doing, I guess. It's hard to we got to be careful about how we talk about this here on Wisconsin Public Radio, but I think that's probably just a lack of experience showing there somehow. Well, thanks again, Georgia, and let's go back to the TV special, Dan. And we got two three minutes here yet to talk about that special, so let's do it. Tell us about it.
Well, we've hit on a lot of the elements already in the hour and a half here. We open with some footage of Keith Beam reading to his kids, and we cover a lot of the topics that Mark and I have talked about here, the turkey management plan, ways to enhance habitat for turkeys. One thing we didn't address here is we briefly talk about turkey diseases and what to do if you find a dead turkey in the woods that looks like it might have been, might have a disease or something. But throughout the show, we have some absolutely fantastic video that illustrates just about everything that folks have talked about, except for the breeding. There's a lot of strutting and showing off and a lot of gobbling. Our videographer and editor, Dave Roll from Eau Claire, used to do the show, the Dave Carlson show. He's an avid turkey hunter himself, and he shot a lot of this footage, and we got a lot of footage from the Wild Turkey Federation. So if you like to see turkeys and you want to see them up close and personal, there will be a lot of video showing that. And the show will air, as you've mentioned a couple times, Larry, on Milwaukee Public TV next Thursday in the time slot that Outdoor Wisconsin normally has. That's 9 o'clock. And then it repeats on Saturday morning at 9 on Milwaukee Public TV. And then the Wisconsin Public TV network statewide, the flagship channel, will air the show on Monday night, April 25th at 8 p.m. And then it'll also be on Fox Sports North, Fox Sports Wisconsin, Fox 47 in Madison, WDSE, WRPT Duluth Superior and the Iron Range, and also now on the Vernon Communications Community Network, Channel 14.
Wow.
And all of these will be listed on our Facebook page, the Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin Facebook page. So if you just type in Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin, I'm updating it every time we add new stations.
Well, that is just wonderful. You mentioned Facebook, because somebody started a Facebook page on the wild turkeys of the east side of Madison. We've got our turkeys have their own Facebook page as well. And this has been a lot of fun. You know, one quick thing: was there any new changes in the regulations on turkeys this year?
Nothing, sure, nothing too big coming up in terms of changes to regulations. The big change is in the licensing system. So we recently switched to the Go Wild system, which has a number of great positives. So, for example, you don't have to necessarily carry around paper licenses anymore.
Yep.
There's a conservation card, which looks like a credit card, which has a barcode on it that'll contain all of your information, your authorizations. And also, you can use your driver's license. So you no longer need to carry those paper permits around, which if you carry them in your wallet like I do and have a bad back because of it, it's an improvement. So
absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I really appreciate you guys spending the 90 minutes with us today. Dan, so great. I mean, you got a great show there as always, and we'll look forward to seeing it.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure. Good to talk with you and Mark.
Yeah, and Mark... You know, you and I have got to get back together, too. Dan and I, you know, we get hooked up here from time to time, but you're the Farm Bill specialist, and among other things, I really would like to talk with you about the Farm Bill really has, and we don't have the time today, but the Farm Bill really has an impact on our wildlife, and so maybe we'll get you back and just zero in on that for 45 minutes or so. Love to do it.
Sounds great. I'd be happy to.
Mark Witeka of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, our guest, along with Dan Small. Great calls today. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful calls. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be taking a look at your tax questions. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.